Okay. Well, plus four is still really good, but that's not as powerful as plus eight. See, you get the just pure knowledge from monsters and multiclass. Plus eight is better than plus four. You guys write that one down, because it's going to change your games up.
Welcome to Monsters and Multiclass, your Dungeons & Dragons fix. I'm Kevin Odie.
I'm Jared Bornigal.
And I'm Will Meldon.
And we'll be hanging out with you for a while to talk about anything and everything D&D related. On this episode, we are taking a look at the Elhoun, the creepy, arcane, kind of lichy mind flayers. Will be a lot more charismatic in explaining that. So yeah, kind of rounding out our mind flayer video with the Elhoun here. Will?
Mind Flayer Society, as you probably know from our wonderful Mind Flayer episode, it's a rather twisted place with some fairly strange strictures. While eating a creature's brains for sustenance is the default, arcane studies are verboten. But that doesn't stop a few more nerdy inclined mind flayers from pursuing this. They are condemned to a life outside the wonders of the Elder Brain. And it's got a lot of negative characteristics. Not to mention, becoming a lich is hard, and mind flayers are kind of lazy. So they screwed it up. A group of nine, I believe, of these creatures got together and made their own version of lichdom. It's not really that good, but they did get some powers out of it. So let's dive into the cursed Alhoons.
Yeah, it really is just like a cheap lich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In every sense of it.
Yes. Yeah. So it's... goes on to say how mind flayers do not fear death because their mind becomes one of the Elder Brain, and in that sense they live on eternally. These arcane mind flayers who have had to flee their colonies do not have that as a comfort, so they seek out lichdom. But yeah, their shortcut where they have to do a ceremony over a
it's like a
of mind trapping.
Yeah, it's like a pseudo phylactery. Yeah.
Right, and they put souls in it, and then whatever like remaining life of the soul they put in there, they get that. But they could still be destroyed and killed. If they are, though, their soul then also goes to the periap of mind trapping. And there was not really a clear way of how to get it out of there.
It doesn't. And that's actually kind of interesting, is they're almost making their normal afterlife in this little contained unit, because the whole thing is that when a mind flayer dies, it goes into the Elder Brain and becomes one with the Elder Brain and kind of lives on in the ability to communicate with its other mind flayers, though the need for communication is fuzzy. But that's kind of what they're doing with this. They can communicate with all of the other mind flayers that are in this little periapt of mind trapping, as well as any of the victims that they've sacrificed. So when they die and go into it, they basically get to borrow their continued time, because I believe it, like, once it, if they only had 50 years, then they get to be in the periapt of mind trapping for 50 years, and then that's it. They go into the oblivion. So it's just like a way of them delaying it and getting a little bit of their afterlife.
Yeah, I never really put that together, how that's recreating their... I didn't see anywhere it says, though, after their allotted time is up, that they go away. I think they're just kind of trapped in there indefinitely, unless it's destroyed.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and it's saying anybody who holds the periap of mind trapping can converse with the souls in there. Both the Elhoun and the sacrificed souls, and the Elhoun... they can re-sacrifice souls into there to kind of reset their clock. So I think that's kind of their ideal scenario. They find like a young elf who's going to live 1,000 years, and they get 1,000 years, and getting near the end of it, they find someone else to redo that with and just kind of keep living as long as they are not killed through, you know, violence.
Sure. Sure. So with the idea that whoever holds onto this thing can speak, I guess you can speak with all of the creatures inside of it, basically, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that would be like, it would really just continue to stack unless the thing was destroyed, because you'd have like more and more mind flayers potentially get it going into this thing, as well as all of the sacrificed beings going into it. I could see a lot of potential chaos ensuing from the wrong person getting their hands on that and getting all of the knowledge of those creatures. And that would be fun.
Yeah, and it goes on to specifically saying the creature carrying the Periap cannot prevent communication from the Elhoons, though they could silence the trapped souls.
They can... Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so like they could choose to not hear the trapped souls yelling at them, but the Elhoons will get through no matter what.
Right. Right. And yeah. I guess then if the Elhoons had specific motives, maybe there is a way for them to get brought back. I could see it gets into the wrong person's hands and they get corrupted, basically like a almost like a warlock relationship. Actually, that could be a great character. You have one of these things and they're giving you, I guess there's no really psionic warlock, but I could just see Great Old One fitting there.
Yeah, or just doing the Fathomless with all the tentacle stuff.
Fathomless, yes, perfect.
Yeah, and then you take the Talisman Pact. Back to the Talisman.
Yep.
And this is where, there we go.
Dang, that would be awesome. That's a great character. And then, you know, ends with them accidentally releasing some Elhoons, and now your party has to track and kill them.
Right. And the Elhoons are tough. They are, we're going to dive into the stat block.
Wow, what a segue. That was good. Yeah. I applaud you.
Yeah.
You may not be the rhyming guy, but you are the segue guy. Hey, that's a callback to last week.
Last episode. Yeah. So the Elhoons are challenge rating 10, armor class 15, and 120 hit points. So at challenge rating 10, that is pretty fragile.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the expected of Mind Flayers.
And spellcasters.
Yeah. Speed of 30 feet, strength of 11, dex of 12, con of 16, intelligence of 19, wisdom 17, and charisma 17. Really good saving throws of plus 7 to con, plus 8 to intelligence, plus 7 to wisdom, and plus 7 to charisma. So hard to get them to fail there. I'm skipping around, but they do have magic resistance as well, so they get advantage on all the saving throws. That would be related to that anyways. Whole bunch of skills of Arcana, Deception, History, Insight, Perception, and Stealth. Each one plus 7 or 8, Stealth being plus 5, which still goes back to just kind of weird that all the Mind Flayers have Stealth. It doesn't seem to fit them. And especially like the Elhoon, because it goes on to say they lose their protective mucus coating and their flesh kind of decays and it's just like white and cracked and they got glowing eyes like liches, and Stealth just doesn't seem...
I don't know.
It always bugged me.
You are correct. It is a little bit weird. I mean, they could have just not had that on and nobody would have questioned it.
Yep. All right, damage resistance to cold, lightning, necrotic, and full immunity to poison, and then bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing from non-magical attacks. Full immunity is definitely rare for the martial damage.
Yeah, that one's always kind of weird to me, because I get the feeling if your party is fighting, one, realistically, a couple of these things at once, because, well, I guess we'll talk about that later, it's kind of weird to just, like, fight one randomly. CR 10, you could on paper throw a level 6 party at this and have them come out on top. I don't really know if that would work, to be honest, because this thing has a lot of stuff up its sleeve where that challenge rating 10 is a little bit deceptive beyond its 120 HP. But the point I'm really trying to make is that it's a very binary thing where either the party has magical weapons, in which case the immunity means nothing, or they don't have magical weapons and they're totally screwed.
Yeah.
Which
is a fair point.
Which isn't bad. You know, it's just something to keep in mind that you look at that and it's like, oh, wow, immunity to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing, but it's non-magical. So maybe this doesn't matter at all. Maybe one person in the party doesn't have a magical weapon, which isn't unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to cast a spell on them to give them a magical weapon, which is also something available. So party specific, that either matters or it doesn't matter in the least bit.
Yeah, definitely. All right, they have a bunch of condition immunities of charmed, exhausted, frightened, paralyzed, and poisoned. They're always nice.
Yes. This is what every single good enemy should have immunity to. You're not
the stuff that really takes it out of a fight.
Yes, you're not getting any of this BS, like, I don't know, hypnotic pattern just ruining an entire boss fight.
Right. They have true sight out to 120 feet, passive perception of 17, so really hard to trick and sneak up on. A few languages, including telepathy, out to 120 feet. So in terms of passive features, the magic resistance I mentioned, advantage on saving throws against spells and other magical effects, combined with the great saves, fantastic, and also all those condition immunities. It's going to be hard to, yeah, to get a save or suck spell off and just shut these things down. They do have innate psionic spell casting. This is basically, I think it's actually is the same as all Mind Flayers. It's just a higher save DC of 16. At will, they can do detect thoughts and levitate. And once a day each, dominate monster and plane shift.
Yeah.
As we talked about in the Mind Flayer episode, dominate monster is definitely a scary thing to be used against your party. Plane shift to run away. Plane shift self only, I should say. You can't plane shift other people. Levitate could potentially be a little crowd control, you know.
Sure.
Some options there, but nothing crazy. Well, but then they also have no...
Before you even go too much further, I mean, the plane shift is actually kind of crazy because it's basically their get out of jail free card. It makes it very difficult to actually kill these creatures because the second I mean, I'm not even talking about like when their backs are up against the wall. I'm saying when the party walks in, they're going, wow, these people have magical weapons. Those can hurt me. Bye, plane shift. There's no reason for it not to. So, like, this becomes a very difficult enemy to actually have the party fight.
That's true. Because, yeah, this isn't like the Elder Brains and stuff have plane shift, but they're very attached to their home.
Right.
And not wanting to give up their colonies. These ones aren't. Yeah, they
might
have a layer.
They're periapt.
Yeah,
so that's the kicker right there.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think there's a couple scenarios that I'll get to once we get through the stat block that I've had noodling. But in general, I mean, this is something to keep in mind as the DM. I guess is that they're not as attached. I think you put it in a good way, Kevin. Is that they're just. They're kind of drifters. They might have two buds that they hang out with every like 50 years to go suck some souls. But beyond that, who cares? You know, you want to get brain milkshakes.
All right. And then they also have normal spellcasting, their 12th level spellcasters, DC of 16 plus 8 to hit. So can't, I don't know if we want to read all of these. There's a lot. Screw it. All right, cantrips, they have Chill Touch, Dancing Light, Mage Hand, Prestidigitation, and Shocking Grasp.
If you're using
all very fitting.
Any of these cantrips, you've screwed up this fight.
You think?
I mean, for the most part. There's
slots, Kevin.
Yeah.
Well, keep in mind, they're 12th level, so these are going to be 3 dice for these cantrips.
Sure. I'm not saying damage-wise they're not great. It's just that you have more important stuff
they
to
have,
cast.
Yeah, they have a lot of spell slots. So they have 4 first level spell slots. And if detect magic, disguise self, magic missile, and shield. Shield's always nice. Magic missile, good damage. Yeah, obviously disguise self, you're not using in combat, but...
Could, though.
Probably very useful for an undead illithid to be able to disguise itself.
Yeah, I'd love if it could disguise everything except for the tentacles, and it had to, like, right. put on a really...
Explain it away.
Yeah.
Or, like, a big fake dwarf beard.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, 3 second level spots of invisibility, mirror image, and scorching ray. All fantastic. So even though this only has an AC of 15 between shield and mirror image, this thing can be very hard to hit.
Yeah. Mirror image is so good.
Yeah, and it's not concentration. It lasts a minute. The fact it's not concentration what makes it great. It is a whole action, but that's the one then you have like two or three duplicates of yourself. And when you roll a hit, you have to roll a D20. If you're under a certain number, you hit a duplicate instead. And
yeah, and that's like that one is great for holding concentration too. Just because, I mean, for that same reason of you might hit something else. But when you have a class that so heavily relies on maintaining concentration, even just not getting hit for any reason is like a fantastic way to delay it and keep yourself dangerous.
At 3 third level slots, and they get Counterspell, Fly, and Lightning Bolt. I was also going to mention that second level, Scorching Ray is a great damage spell. And they got plenty of slots to upcast it.
For upcasting, yes. Yeah. I was going to say, at second level, it actually is competing with cantrips.
It's 3d6. Yeah, and each one's 2d6.
Okay.
Not a d6. So right. It would be 6d6 if they all hit.
Yeah.
All right, but the Alhoun having counterspell in addition to the crazy saves and magical resistance, just even more difficult to get spells off on this thing. Yeah, fly making it hard to hit. Lightning Bolt is a great damage spell, 86 in a line, and it can also be upcast. Three fourth level slots, and they get Confusion, Everett's Black Tentacles, and Phantasmal Killer. I'm not in love with Phantasmal Killer, but Confusion and Everett's Black Tentacles is great.
What do you not like about Phantasmal Killer? That's the one where...
I might be getting it confused with Phantasmal Force.
You are. Yeah, this one is target makes a wisdom save. On a fail, they become frightened, and at the end of the target's turn, before the spell ends, the target must succeed a wisdom saving throw or take 4d10 psychic damage. On a success, the spell ends. So, I mean, you're potentially doing 4d10 psychic damage around... It is concentration, though.
Yeah. I think I'd rather do Everett's Black Tentacles or Confusion at that fourth level slot.
Because at least for Everett's, you get, the restrained condition?
Yeah, and damage.
And damage.
And it's a big AoE.
Yeah.
And Confusion's also an AoE and takes people out of fights.
Yeah. No, that's probably fair. Phantasmal Killer is really good for, a single target causing you issues. Because right. If they are... frightened, do they even have to run away? They don't, but it could be good to use Phantasmal Killer on a spellcaster, and if they fail it, then you can get far away and out of the range of their spells potentially. But
yeah,
that's kind of situational. I'm with you. I think Everett's and Confusion are going to be better overall.
Right. All right, two fifth level slots, Modify Memory and Wall of Force. Modify Memory could have interesting adventure implications. For sure. And Wall of Force can be good, but as we've recently keep discussing, there are definitely limitations that pop up once you actually start using it and really thinking about what you have at your disposal.
Yeah. I know we talked about it in a recent episode. I don't remember which at this point, so I can't do the point, and I'm not gonna make you see it too much. But the main issue is that it doesn't break line of sight. So a lot of spells that just, force sight or can be saves, then it's not too great on. Now, that said, while I'm talking, I'm remembering that this thing has magic resistance and some of the most amazing saving throws I've seen in some time. So, really, I don't know if I care that you can cast Hold Monster on this creature when it's got Wall of Force up, because it still has advantage on wisdom saving throws and +7 to that wisdom saving throw. So, Wall of Force could be really good for shutting down martial characters, and it, by default, shuts down spellcasters. So maybe Wall of Force has limitations, but I think for this creature, a lot of those limitations are removed anyways.
And then at six, once one six level slot, Disintegrate and Glove of Invulnerability. It's always scary when a monster has Disintegrate.
Yeah. And I'll just go back to kind of the exact same thought around Wall of Force as Globe of Invulnerability. Globe of Invulnerability is really good at shutting down spellcasters. This thing is a walking shutdown for spellcasters. So I don't think I would ever use the six level spot. Hey, you got me doing it now.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd ever use the six level spell slot to put Globe of Invulnerability up when I've got Disintegrate just waiting there. And I only have one six level slot to use.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, because you could just pass through it. Like, this thing is vulnerable to being hit. And yeah, you could just pass through the Glove of Invulnerability, which is just a really not fitting name, because it just shuts down spells, that's it.
Right. I guess they didn't have the characters to put Globe of Invulnerability to spells.
Right.
Under fifth level. Yeah, I don't think I'd bother with that.
Right. So that is all the spell casting.
Let's be honest, three counterspells, you've got your invulnerability.
Right, and +8 to Arcana, so even if it's just casting its counterspells at third level, that's a really high chance that it's going to shut down your spells.
I don't think Arcana is added to it. I think it's just spellcasting modifier.
That's still, I guess... Man, now I forget how that works. Same. Well, if it's your spellcasting modifier, do you get your proficiency?
You make an ability check using your spellcasting ability.
Okay, so yeah, it's the same thing. It's +8 in this case.
But no, an ability check using your spellcasting ability.
Oh, so no proficiency bonus. So
it's just intelligence.
Okay. Okay, well, +4 is still really good, but that's not as powerful as +8. See, you get the just pure knowledge from Monsters and Multiclass. +8 is better than +4. You guys write that one down, because it's going to change your games up.
All right, in the last pass feature, turn resistance, they have advantage on saving throws against effects that turn undead, which is fine and fading because that would kind of ruin these fights. Though I would think they would already get that through magic resistance.
Well, no, because magic resistance...
Spells are magical effects.
Oh, yeah, I would put that under a magical effect.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
I would honestly give them turn immunity, but... Whatever. It's probably going to succeed. Again, it has +7 to wisdom saving throws, and it would have advantage. So,
yeah,
effectively +12, yeah, from a math perspective.
Right.
They're going to succeed.
Yeah, I think so, too. All right, just two actions. Most of this thing is going to be casting spells, but it does have Chilling Grasp. It's a melee spell attack, +8 to hit with a reach of 5 feet. Does 3d6 cold damage. I don't know why you would ever do this.
Well, because
it's worse than your cantrips.
Why not just use Chill Touch? You know, that would also do cold damage and be touch, right?
Yeah. But no, I guess you would have disadvantage.
No.
It's necrotic shocking damage. Grasp. Yeah, rage. Yeah. Yeah, Shocking Grasp. That's what you want
to
do.
I was saying that just to,
I know,
to mess with you.
It's a terrible name. Yeah.
This actually did make me think, though, because I said there's no reason to ever use a cantrip. I actually thought of one really dickish reason to use a cantrip. Chill Touch makes it so that the creature can't restore HP. Knocking somebody down to 0 HP and then using Chill Touch on them so that they can't be restored back would be a great way to do that. Or going over their body and casting Globe of Invulnerability. Extra dickish move for DMs out there.
Yeah.
Say, nope, no healing word, no cure wounds. You're out. But that's what Disintegrate's for. Just blow them up.
Yeah.
Turn them to dust.
Yeah. All right, so with Chilling Grasp, though, I mean, yeah, comparing it to Shocking Grasp, Shocking Grasp is going to be 3d8, and then they can't take reactions.
Yes, so there is...
And you make a melee spell attack, so it's going to be +8, reach of 5 feet. I don't know why you would ever do Chilling Grasp.
If the...
And there's a decent chance Shocking Grasp will be an advantage.
Oh, if they're wearing armor made of metal, yeah.
Are there any spells that create like an anti-magic area? I feel like there's like an anti-magic cone or something like that.
This is the anti-magic sphere.
Sphere, yeah,
like,
okay.
The holders have the cone out of their eye, right. And then there's like globe or sphere. Yeah, there is an anti-magic spell.
That's the only reason. They have something right. In case that happens.
I think they
don't, because this is a melee spell attack, and I'd argue it doesn't work.
Oh. Yeah, I think that was their...
I don't even know what this is.
Yeah.
So I think it's called that because they didn't want to just say that intelligence is their attack. Because that's like saying that the artificer's attacks are melee spell attacks because they get to use their intelligence. It's more of that they didn't have a way of describing it at the time, so they're like, it's a melee spell attack. But I would agree that based on that wording, it would not work in an anti-magic field. And that sucks. It's dumb, but it's the way it is.
Nothing matters. I don't know what this ability is. Why can they do this? Whatever.
All right, and the final action here and final bit of their stat block is Mind Blast. This all Mind Flayers get into some form of this or another. Recharge 5 to 6, and they emit psychic energy in a 60-foot cone. Each creature must succeed on a DC 16 intelligence saving throw, or they take 48 plus 4 psychic damage and are stunned for 1 minute. They can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns. Like I said, all Mind Flayers get this. Very useful. Even for the Alhoun and all their nifty spells, I can still see taking an action to Mind Blast being worthwhile.
Man, you know what would be awesome against this thing? the Oath of the Watchers.
Yeah. Wait, no. No, they wouldn't. It's undead.
It is undead, but being able to give advantage on wisdom, charisma, and intelligence saving throws would be super useful.
It would be, yeah.
But I think normal Mind Flayers get this, and any of the Mind Flayer Arcanist, which I think we did talk about already in the Mind Flayer episode. Should we already link that? If not, do it again.
Yeah.
that would be a good subclass to fight against Mind Flayers. But the Mind Blast is just as debilitating as ever, stunning the entire party potentially. 60-foot cone is huge.
Yep, DC 16 intelligence saving throw is tough.
And yeah, doing a good amount of damage when you're stunned. That's it. And it's a recharge.
You know what really sucks? Failing dex saves automatically when a creature has a particularly nasty dex save they might want to use on you.
Yeah, disintegrate. This is
great.
There's just a lot of combos in here.
Oh, stunned automatically fails dex saves. Oof.
I mean, that's just nasty. Because you know the Alhoun.
Yeah, throw this at your level 6 party. It'll be funny. It'll be great. Right. You'll love it.
Right. I'm going to stand by. This is a very poorly assigned challenge rating. Just because of the potential in the right hands. I won't say the wrong hands.
Yeah. Just in case someone doesn't know, Disintegrate is a 6-level spell. It's one action, 60-foot range. You force a dex save. And if the creature fails, they take 10d6 plus 40 force damage. And if they're reduced to 0 hit points, they're disintegrated into dust. You can only really bring that back for like a true resurrection or a wish then at that point.
Sure, pretty hard to disintegrate.
Mm-hmm. So it's a rough spell.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you do, I think the only reason why a 6-level party would fight this thing was if it was for a single round. For the creature to just leave afterwards and say, oh, I'm not dealing with this. And then it's like set up for the players to then go and find it when they are stronger and have now even just seen its power after the first turn. Because if you want to just terrify your party, I guess, what do you say? It's 8d6 plus 40? Or 10d6 plus 40?
10d6 plus 40.
So average damage of, would that be 80? 80 average damage.
Yeah, about.
That might wipe out a level. That's probably going to kill a level 6 character in one go, actually. So you can't use that. Maybe just disintegrate next to them. Like literally show that the Alhoun has disintegration and the next turn it decides to plane shift and watch as your entire party breathes a collective sigh of relief. Not knowing if it has more than one of those.
Right. Or you use it on an NPC.
Sure.
That's always the really classic and very impactful way. You get in, you have the players fight an NPC who kicks their ass, but like it's not an evil NPC and misunderstanding or whatever, it does not kill them. And then something comes up and destroys that NPC.
Right.
Like, and it's like, oh, okay, we're not ready for this.
Yeah, like, oh yes, I'm also Alhoun hunting. So yeah, this, I mean, stat block is absolutely terrifying. And I think that there's very, very few reasons that you're going to fight this thing one-on-one or one-on-four if you're a whole party, whatever amount you want to say.
Right.
Between Dominate Monster, where it's either going to use that on one of your party members and turn them, or on any creature it really wants to, and we can just say that, yeah, that's its minion, and it's going to turn it against you guys. Or the fact that a very good time to try and fight these things and actually successfully take them down is during their ritual. The thing that they conduct to extend their life is the one time that they're going to have all of the pieces in place for the party to meaningfully destroy them.
Right.
And that means there's going to be three of them.
Because of the barrier. Yeah.
And that's a scary fight.
Yes, it is. Made a little better, though, by the... It's in the flavor text. It's not in the stat block, but it does matter. If someone's holding the parry of Mind Trapping, it gains advantage on attack saves and checks against the Alhoons associated with its creation. And those Alhoons, in turn, suffer disadvantage on attack saves and checks against the holder. Which is pretty nice.
Yeah. So if you have a way of grabbing it mid-fight, You know, your party knows this beforehand, that, hey, having this in hand gives you an advantage against them. They're going to want to stick around and kill you, because if you have that in hand, then all of their hard work is gone and lost forever. Would they?
Right.
I forget if I misread or what, or just forgot. Again, goldfish memory. If you destroy the periapt, does that kill them outright immediately? Or is it like then they can actually die?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't remember reading that either.
I think that they still live. They just, if they die, they go into the oblivion, not into the periapt.
Right.
So, yeah, this entire stat block and lore is just, I think you have more opportunities than even mind flayers of just things you can do with them. And I love them. I like these more than Mind Flayers for whatever reason.
Well, because Mind Flayers all have the really kind of difficult to deal with brain-eating stuff. Where you can, like, it just wipes somebody out in a turn and a half.
Right.
Like, literally, just kill the character except for a wish spell type deal. Thank God there's nothing like that in the stat block.
Are you just seriously still...
Wait a second.
Are you still bitter about Disintegrate? It's been 3 years, man.
Yes.
Get over it.
He didn't. He was disintegrated.
Well, maybe he should have succeeded on his dex check. So, yeah, some ideas that I had, or at least one right off the bat, is just like, rumors swimming around of like creatures popping up every 50 or 100 years or something and stealing people in the night. And the party, of course, walks into this area around that time, or they're specifically at this place because of it being this time, and either somebody's captured, or maybe somebody was almost captured and gives the party a lead as to where these creatures are, and then the party walks in, and either the ritual's being conducted or about to be conducted, and these creatures seeing somebody come in just, like, you know, leave immediately with their plane shift, because why wouldn't they? And now the party... Again, either maybe they had like a single round of combat with them, saw how powerful they were, now need to gather enough information and stop this ritual from actually taking place and really putting a stop to things. If you want it to be a quick fight, it could be a matter of the Alhoons leave, the party wins, even if they don't kill them, and just forget about it. And you never bring up this plot hook again. But if the players are really excited about it and want to put a stop to this for good because they're goody-goody two-shoes, then great. There's tons you can do about, you know, them having to learn about the periapt, maybe Mind Flayer sending things, or these Alhoon sending things to kill the adventuring party away from this because they know that they're hunting them down. And I just think there's tons of little threads that need to be closed before the party can really have this final confrontation and kill these things for good, that allows this to be an entire arc that would be awesome in a campaign.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, a lot of lore to discover. And
the only downside I have is that there is zero moral ambiguity in killing these creatures. They are bad. There's no bright side, there's no futzing with it. They literally are stealing souls to prolong their life, and that's no bueno in most cultures.
No, yeah. And that's okay. It doesn't always have to be morally ambiguous.
For sure. Yes. In case that's not clear, that is true. It does not need to be morally ambiguous, but you know.
In your Alhoon hunting arc, you could have a trip to Mind Flayers. During the Mind Flayers, we were trying to talk about ways you might end up working with one.
Yeah.
This could be it, because Mind Flayers see Alhoons as an abomination.
Right.
And would probably be okay with working with someone to get them wiped out.
Yeah.
And then they would have maybe a bit of information, or maybe not a whole lot, but the party wouldn't know that because it looked like Mind Flayers. So it's like, all right, let's go see if we could ask the Mind Flayers.
Yeah.
And that could be, it's kind of a scary, tense thing.
Or when hunting down rumors, they hear of these creatures with tentacle faces and all this stuff, and they go, oh, well, that's probably our marks. That's who we're trying to find. They get there,
right,
realize that, no, these are just normal Mind Flayers, and get to what you were talking about of working together.
Right.
But at the same time, there is that conversation that needs to be had of, maybe we should just kill them all. all of them without question.
That's a good point.
They can give us some information, but then we'll kill them, right? Like, after we kill the Alhoons, we're coming back for these Mind Flayers. And that's still not bad. I mean, that's, I think, the way it would need to be explained. Mind Flayers are smart, and if they felt like they had a use for the party, they would probably be trying to be conniving and doing the same thing of, yes, you go take care of the Alhoon, and when you come back, which of course you will because you're going to try and kill us, we can take you. We're not worried about that. And then we get your brains and we get a strong adventuring right. party under our wiles. Yeah. Go with that.
Yeah. That's cool stuff. There is a variant here, the Mind Flayer Lich, which is like, take this Lich stat block and then add all this other Alhoon stuff to it. We're not going to cover
it. Well, no, not really. It just, it adds Illithid stuff.
Yeah.
Because you'll note the Alhoon does not have the eat your brain thing.
That's true.
Whereas this Mind Flayer Lich is a lich that can eat your brain, which,
like,
it's just like an aura of cruelty right. to this creature that even the lich doesn't right. have.
I'll eat souls.
It is one challenge rating higher.
Brains, no thanks.
Yeah. But yeah, we are not planning on covering that in detail in this episode because, I mean, lich is a huge topic and we would need to cover that stat block. That will probably be its own episode in time.
Yeah, I'll just say I don't think we'll ever cover the Mind Flayer Lich specifically because if we cover liches no. and we've covered Mind Flayers, just smash them together and it's all there. Because the Mind Flayer Lich is basically the same lore as the Alhoon. They just were more secluded and sought out lichdom for themselves and by themselves. It's not like this total lore flip on its head. It's like, oh, what if they weren't lazy?
Yes. Yeah, well, it's so it, how it's written, it's not so much lazy, it's that to achieve actual lichdom requires somebody to be at the absolute top of arcane casting, like the complete prowess of the arcane arts, and most Illithid just aren't capable of that because it really is against their nature. Every once in a while, and so they cheat and do the Alhoon thing. Every once in a while, you do have one come along that is able to achieve that, and they achieve full lichdom.
Sure. So what you're saying is they're unable to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, and they're lazy.
Lazy Alhoons. Stuck at challenge rating level 10 as opposed to 22 for the real thing.
But no, seriously, it's obviously a little bit different. And I say lazy just to simplify the matter. It is more cheating. I think that's a better way of putting it. They cheat yeah. and they become Alhoons because they're like, well, this is good enough. And how hard is it to get a sacrifice and 3 days of peace and quiet once every 200 years if we're getting some elves?
Right. And then the adventurers find out, and suddenly it is actually pretty hard.
Yeah. But we only get to see it the times where it doesn't work out for them, because that's what playing the game is about. It's not about all the times that Alhoons just do this and take only the souls that they need and extend their lives for thousands and thousands of years. For those thousands and thousands of years, things are actually going great for them. It's just the fact that we show up in the 2 months that adventurers get autonomy in the situation and put a stop to it.
Right.
So, kind of hard.
Adventurers are pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Just disrupting the natural order of everything.
Which is very much so I could see that Alhoons just go and they specifically try to get adventurers just because they're like, if we don't nip this in the bud, they're going to get level 20 and we're not going to be as scary anymore.
Right.
And their souls are extra tasty. Who knows?
Well-seasoned.
Well-seasoned.
Possibly gamey, though.
Yeah, yeah, that's why you go for, like, the fat wizards.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I really like these. And honestly, reading through them is making me remember that you can base an entire arc around a monster. I think I said this in our last episode, just that a lot of the things we've been fighting have very much been humanoids, and that's fun because I can put in a lot of moral ambiguity, but there's still so much you can do with some of these monsters, and I think that these ones are very ripe for the picking. So I look forward to other people putting them in their games. I have to wait 2 to 3 years so that Kevin and Will can forget about it and it feels fresh.
It's the curse we wear.
Yeah. You guys don't get, we like talk about fun monsters and then I'm like, great, we're not using this soon because you guys remember everything about it. Sorry.
I forget the specifics of the stat blocks really fast, actually.
Yeah. No, I have like a 2 to 3 month waiting period just for like normal encounters, but you know. Right. And also, even if I did use Elhoons, I would change up the lore considerably because
right,
that's what you got to do.
It's your world.
It's, yeah, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
They don't tell you until it's too late. You can change whatever you want. First page of the DMG. All right.
Yeah, I think that's...
That is almost it, Kevin.
Yeah, almost it.
It's almost it because I have to tell you all about our affiliate, Describe. Do you know about Describe, Kevin?
I do.
Good. Will, do you know about Describe?
I've heard of it.
Okay. All right. Well, by our knowledge combined, we can have me say everything about them because Describe is a tool that DMs can use in order to craft or have crafted for them amazing descriptions of just about any scenario that you can think of. Use it all the time when trying to get inspiration for travel montages, which I love doing because otherwise you have that really weird like teleportation feeling where you leave a town and then boom, you're at your destination. No, every time go to Describe, put in where they are, the location, and either just rip it word for word or slightly tweak it. It's just an amazing starting point in the same way that I always will look up monster stat blocks before making a monster. I always am going to use Describe to try and make a great description before I do it from scratch, because the only thing worse than doing everything from scratch is paying full price for things. And that's why you can use our code MNM50 to get 50% off a 3 month subscription. Nope, that's Bardley. It's MM10. There we go. MM10 for 10% off your subscription to Describe. Saved it. By the skin of my teeth. So go ahead and check that out. Fantastic resource for DMs. And since we're at the end of the episode, make sure to like the video if you're watching the video. And if you're not watching the video, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. Ring the bell to get your podcasts. I might be mixing them up, but that's not important. Do all of the things
the bell
that
ring, right?
Help yeah. The algorithm. Leave a comment. Share it with your friends. And if you want to support the show, you can go to monstersandmulticlass.com/support. And if you are already supporting the show, your name is probably Jeff W., Joe P., Vincent M., Isaac M., Sentinel D20, Star Shinobi, Adam A., and Home Bakery, because that is the list of our patrons. And if you want to help out, once again, monstersandmulticlass.com/support. Thank you all so much.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Watching.
Haha.